values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, let's talk about Phoenix and the school board and what they've decided. Reading from the news story, if you're not familiar with what has been going on, months and months ago, the Phoenix School Board, the Phoenix Union High School District, came up with a safety committee. The safety committee came out with a number of suggestions, including the return of school resource officers to campuses. Well, they've tried to vote on this a couple of different times, and people were showing up demanding more police on campuses. But I come to the conclusion a long time ago, board members don't want it. They can say that this was student-led, it's a farce. There are board members on that school board that just don't like the cops. They're a part of the anti-police movement. They are certainly a part of the anti-police mindset. And so they've now voted to bring cops back. If you read the headline, Phoenix Union votes to bring back school police. But they're not going to have school resource officers. They're going to be regional resource officers, meaning they won't be on campus full time. They'll be called in. But according to the people on the board, or some of the members of the board, they are saying that the goals, here are a couple of the goals. This is a press release from an organization calling itself School to Liberation Campaign. Now, the organizations who are a part of the School to Liberation Campaigns are Poder in Action, Puente, some board members from Phoenix Union, and some staff members. That's how it's listed. Not named, but that's what's listed. Some board members and some staff members. They have a student bill of rights, collecting data, a confidential complaint process to protect students, staff, and educators from the police. Now, how much does that sound like the headline, Phoenix Union votes to bring back school police? This press release says they are going to come up with a new complaint system that protects staff, students, and educators from the police. An expulsion pilot program designed to keep kids out of school to prison pipeline. This is my favorite one. The board also made an effort to continue the conversation about scaling police presence down to zero. So which is it? This press release came out Friday, right after the vote. And it's not directly from the Phoenix Union School Board, but from people that were a part of the decision, certainly. And I wonder how much the school board itself agrees with the bullet points of what wins that for the district. Do they believe? Let's find out who the new superintendent is going to be permanently, and they'll find out if they agree that that's a win for the district. A confidential complaint process to protect students and staff and educators from the police. So according to the news story, the approved plan calls for bringing officers back to the district under a new agreement with the Phoenix Police Department, creating a confidential safety complaint process for students and staff, drafting. Now, it does. Again, how similar is that to this? In the news story says creating a new confidential safety complaint process for students and staff. Then it goes on to the Bill of Rights. How close is that to a confidential complaint process to protect students, staff, and educators from police? That's not in the news story. That part's not in the news story. So either this group that put out this press release is telling you something that they won't tell you. Not this person. I'm not going after the journalist. I'm saying, why is it not in the news story? Was that not what the Phoenix Union told the press? But this group here is taking a victory lap saying that's what they accomplished. I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. The board approved plan satisfied requests made by people on both sides of the debate. This idea, when you look at violence in schools, there were fists everywhere. Violence against teachers is on the rise. This is a Wall Street Journal story that came out yesterday. We talk about a teacher shortage, and then what you hear from the teachers' organizations, and I got to tell you, they are fairly well organized. The teachers' organizations will tell you that the problem in the classroom is that they don't have enough money in the classroom, that schools are not fully funded, that teachers are leaving because of poor pay. I'm not even going to go into the details, but let's just talk about this district. Go and take a look at the median salary for a teacher in the Phoenix Union District. I'm not saying teachers are all paid enough, but go and look at the median salary in the Phoenix Union District. They're not destitute. And so if money isn't just the problem, I hear from teachers all the time. See, just because I have an opinion that doesn't agree with the teachers unions doesn't mean that I go off half cocked on this show. I do my homework. Teachers reach out to me because they can't reach out to the teachers unions. They get no relief there. The teachers union, this teacher organization, AEA, AEU, they are a political machine. They are politically driven. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they will tell you. They are a politically driven machine. They don't like Republican governors. They don't like Republican legislators, and they say as much, which I don't necessarily care about. That's not the problem. But when it comes to an issue like this, they will tell you that it's teacher pay, and I will tell you that the teachers that I hear from, and I hear from teachers all the time, they are afraid. They are afraid for the good students. They have students that say they don't want to use the restrooms between classes because they're afraid. Wouldn't it be interesting if someone did a Freedom of Information Act request, and I know it's been done, and we're going to find out the results. What if parents wanted to know how many times have the police been called to our school? How many times have you found weapons? Because if this new plan is to protect students and teachers and educators, they say staff and educators, from the police, does that mean, and this is a fair question, if the law is broken on campus, are you planning on keeping it in-house? Are you going to confiscate a firearm or a knife from a student and turn it over to the police but not tell the police who that student is? And then ask them if that's happened. Someone asked the Phoenix Police Department that. I bet you they'd be more willing to cooperate. Has the district turned over drugs that were taken off of students where the district has refused to tell the police where the drugs came from, who the student was, claiming this confidentiality policy? Again, there's no rule. There's not a law on that confidentiality. It's a policy. So when it comes time for elections, and these are nonpartisan elections, so it's a little harder for us to understand where a person's political leanings are, and it's hard to decide who you're going to vote for by driving past a campaign sign doing 40 miles an hour. But we're going to highlight the people up for re-election and where they stand and the people that are running against them, because I think it's time for us just to kind of stand up and say we may disagree politically on a lot of different things, but this is going way, way too far. And I'm anxious to see if it works. I want to see if we can get some legs under this where people are going to start asking serious questions. With this press release didn't just come here. This press release went all over the valley. How does the press release contradict the information or not fill in the blanks of the information given out by the district? It's a valid question, because according to this organization, there are board members and staff members in this organization that say one of the wins for the district is that you're going to protect people from the police. And you're carrying on the conversation to still try to get the contact and the presence with police on your campuses down to zero. Pretty interesting. Coming up in a moment, we have got the biggest news stories of the day. It's called Did You Hear This? It's coming up in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, let's get caught up on the biggest headlines of the day. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Gas prices are expected to rise as Saudi Arabia plans to cut 1 million barrels of oil per day. ABC's Alexis Christophorus explains this decision amid other impending factors.
OPEC Plus pumps about 40% of the world's crude oil, so any policy decisions could have a major impact on fuel prices. And another wild card for gas prices going forward, hurricane season. Any damage done to oil refineries along the Gulf Coast could send gas prices soaring.
Will the Biden administration administration do anything to avoid further price increases, or are we waiting for the next administration to regain self-sufficiency?
I think even if they did change their policies dramatically, it would take such a long time to get us back on track. And that's the issue, is these things don't happen overnight, and then they don't, you don't reverse them overnight. So I think it's going to be a long summer. We're going to see higher gas prices, but I don't think this administration is going to change their opinions on things very often. But I had a thought, maybe if we didn't call it crude oil, maybe if we called it politically correct oil, maybe some people would be more in favor of it.
Governor Katie Hobbs explains how she will spend $25 million in border funding differently than former Governor Doug Ducey.
Previously, this type of funding was used for political stunts that didn't effectively help law enforcement do their jobs. Under my administration, working closely with cities and counties, we'll continue to carefully evaluate and identify specific needs of each area.
Will throwing more dollars at the border result in greater security?
I think more money at the border is a great idea. I do think it's odd that the governor said that about former Governor Ducey. The Border Strike Force was such a success in the minds of many people that it expanded to other states, and other states began getting on board with exactly the same thing because it helped to focus. So I understand what she's doing, and I'm glad she's spending the money, but to take a shot at the previous administration, not quite sure why she's doing that, but we'll see if it works. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at this time to catch you up on the headlines.
Arizona is allocating nearly $145 million towards school safety solutions, but have yet to vote on bringing back regional response officers.
The Board of Education, they've approved nearly $100 million to fund these positions, and Horn expects to add over 100 more SROs statewide over the next 3 years. There's also $45 million approved to add another 560 or so counselor and social worker positions.
Is this a good start, and what more should be done to help make our schools safer?
Yeah, well, statewide, it's a great idea. I think that part of the plan has to be law enforcement, but there is such a bigger piece of this. Counselors, social workers are also a great idea for, but they have to be a part of a team where we're assessing threats before they become real threats. We understand that this is a building process most of the time, that especially a young person doesn't go from someone that's troubled and having issues to leaping into a violent act, that if we're catching these things sooner, if there are people or a team of people that are keeping track of behavior in this way and reported behavior, the intervention is going to happen a lot sooner, and maybe we can avoid some of these tragedies.
Stephen A. Smith shares his perspective on what jobs are a good fit for someone in their 80s.
There are responsibilities that are far, far, far more extensive than, let's say, the typical 9-to-5 that somebody in their 80s may not need to be doing. I think the presidency is one of them.
Some have argued that 35 to 55 is a reasonable age for presidential candidates. Does an age limit make sense for the leader of the free world?
I don't think any limits make sense, only because the voters have the say, and I think the voters are seeing this. There is a sentiment in this country, and I think they're right, that when you have people that are that much older, if you look at Dianne Feinstein, I don't agree with her politically on anything, but it is sad to see someone who was a brilliant mind. She was the mayor of San Francisco. She's been a senator for decades. Never agreed with her politics, but there's no arguing her brilliance. But you see what age and dementia has done to her. It is sad to see this happen, but more so for the country if they're not able to do the job. So yeah, I think something has to be done about mental acuity, because some people can do the jobs as they get older. You know, Tom Brady played quarterback into his 40s. That doesn't mean that we're going to have a lot of quarterbacks into their 40s. So I do think that we should be doing something before it becomes so obvious in these leadership positions. I just don't know what that could be, possibly. Julia, do you have a cold? Your voice, it's a bit different. Do you have a cold?
A little bit. Yeah, a little allergy.
Sal, great job.
Thank you so
great
much.
Great job. So that was obviously a new voice, and did you hear this? And don't worry about Julia. She is just prepping someone for while she's gone on vacation. Don't send messages on how much you'll miss her when she's gone. But great job, Sal. Coming up in a moment, we're going to go back to the economy. Gas prices, evictions. Are people getting ready to be squeezed even more? We'll talk about it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, rolling into the final half hour of the show. Happy Monday. Gas prices are set to increase. Talking about evictions going up. The concerns, and as we've gone through this whole process with jobs, the job numbers have been good, but the salaries, the pay has gone dramatic, is starting to fall off dramatically. The one thing that has been a lifesaver is, although inflation has been outpacing wages, people have had the availability of work, and that is starting to slow down dramatically. So I've talked about this a couple of times this morning, but I've left out a few things, and let's go there. Costco shoppers are shifting away from specific items, according to the CFO. So when if you have a Costco membership, you know that things there are a lot less expensive. You buy a lot of things in bulk. But one of the things at Costco is they had a great meat department where you meat and seafood, and they've got some good availability of great products there. And a lot of people shop there for their meat. And the issue is, you understand, when you go into a place like that, you're sacrificing a couple of things. You're going to stand in long lines. You're going to box your own stuff. But it's worth it for the money that you save. Well, they're saying here, historically, we've always seen this, like within fresh protein, we've always seen when there's a recession, whether it was 99, 2000, 08, 09, 2010, we would see some sale penetration shift from beef to poultry and pork. People are moving away from the more expensive meats. Now, again, this is anecdotal, but it's what a lot of families are doing. What we talked about, we had Kristen Bentz on the show last week. And people in Dollar General, I want you to hear this comment from her. Kristen Bentz is an analyst. She's a retail analyst, and she's brilliant. And she talks about the bifurcated market, the working class versus the wealthy. And in the working class, people have been shifting away. We had a shift from Target. Target said they were, and this was before the controversy with Pride Month. People were moving away from Target. Target also talked about theft, and it was costing them $500 million. And it was a huge amount of money. And now we talk about Dollar General and what that market, what those shoppers are doing. And the Dollar General missed two separate goals. And so this is what she said about why this happened. This is Kristen Bentz.
With their numbers yesterday, they had a double miss on earnings and on revenues, which is a big red flag. So when dollar stores start tanking, that's not a good sign. The biggest red flag to me is their CEO attributed the loss in consumers to consumers trading down to food banks.
So this is, we talk about the rungs of the economic ladder, and you understand for some people, it's you're new, you're just starting out in the world, you've got a lot of expenses. One of the other things we talked about was student loans are going to have to be repaid. What's this going to do to younger people that are having to figure out those finances? And so this is what happens in an economy. Inflation hurts everyone, absolutely hurts everyone. What happens in this economy when you start seeing these people taking steps down on the rungs of the ladder? As the bottom rung of the ladder and people fall off, there are more people moving down, when what we wanted to increase was the number of people moving up. That to me is the biggest thing. For me, it's the number one is every political party and candidate says they want to help the middle class, that their goal is to bolster and grow the middle class. Republicans say it. Democrats say it. Democrats talk about the working class in America and middle class. But if you look at what's happened, I would say, I'm just going to submit to you my own opinion, is that when the government gets in the way, they are always cause a problem. If you truly wanted to see a system that works, look at the governments where they get out of the way. Arizona had to revamp its economy. It had no choice. The state. Go back to Governor Brewer when Governor Brewer was in office, and I give her a lot of credit because she had to make some ugly decisions, and she's a tough woman, and so she had to stand up at times to her own party in some of the decisions that were made, and some of her decisions were immensely unpopular with the Republicans at the time, but she was faced with a deficit and faced with a financial cliff that we almost went over, and I believe it's statistically true. If we were not at the bottom, we were near the bottom per capita in debt. And it was because we saw that we were almost monolithic in our economy, that we were too reliant in the construction world. And when that went south, we were in a big, not just the state, but cities. Phoenix was in a big bind as well. But realizing that, so what Governor Brewer had to do along with the legislature, and she had to work with the House and the Senate in coming up with plans to stabilize the economy. And I've used the illustration of it's like being taken to the emergency room with a life-threatening crash, an accident, that the emergency room doctors have to stabilize the patient. You have to keep the patient alive and get the patient stabilized. First and foremost, they will tell you, make sure they're stabilized. And then when that time is over, the next phase for the patient is going to specialists that will then get you back to health. And that is when the orthopedic surgeons and the surgeons come, you know, so the analogy is she was that emergency room physician. Her and the state legislature then stabilized the economy. But then when the next administration came in, they made a concerted effort to diversify the economy, and they went to work on making sure that it was easier for manufacturing to come, reduction in regulation, and both for big and small business. There were a couple of things that were done that made it great for small businesses. One of them was the change in licensing. If you have a license in another state, you could come to Arizona. When you moved here, you didn't have to qualify before you could go to work. You brought your license in good standing, and you went to work under the license where you came from while you were going through the process of licensing in Arizona. The other thing they did was they came up with a website. If you want to start a business in Arizona, there is a website that walks you through the steps of everything you have to do so that you can, it's like a clearinghouse. You can dot every I so it's not this arduous process of licensing and fees and this and that insurance and that. And it helps small business owners because that's a huge expense just in startup that a lot of great ideas can't happen because people don't have the money to get through that process. So those are a couple of things that they did. Regulation changes and some stuff where the government got out of the way. And they reduced taxes. We've seen a rainy day fund, an increase into the coffers. Because we've increased the number of businesses, we've done a very good job of diversifying that economy. So that's a long story to say that I would say when government gets out of the way, when they put more money back into the pockets of taxpayers, whether they're businesses, big or small, or individuals, it bodes well for the economy. And on the other side of that, when they get out of the way with regulations, I would say Arizona is well regulated. If you look around, there are some areas, it happens all the time, either by accident or by carelessness, where businesses do the wrong thing. But by and large, this is a well regulated state. It's a beautiful place. It remains a beautiful place. We don't have crazy development going on. It's managed and intentional growth. We do a good job. But if you look at how different this economy is from where it was 10 years ago, it's an immense difference. It is a big difference, and it was done intentionally. So when you hear these stories from politicians that talk about how they're going to do this for the middle class, they're going to do that for the middle class, ask yourself, and again, I guess it is a criticism, this president ran on being working class. How often does he talk about being from Scranton and all of this riding the train to work and the working class and bus drivers and I was a truck driver and I get all that. I really do. I talk about my middle class upbringing all the time. But it doesn't matter what your intent is. Does anybody believe it's easier to do business now, that businesses are better off now, that the individual is better off now than they were 2 years ago? And the answer is no. Is it 100% the president's fault or policies that are in place because of that political party? No. But is it partially theirs? Absolutely. Without a doubt. Absolutely without a doubt. It is partially to blame. Gas prices and our energy policies, that's a good one to start with. And I just feel bad because the average working family that just wants to be able to live a life where they can pay their bills without sitting up nights wondering how it's going to happen, we've got to get back to that with reasonable growth in the prices of things and wages that are outpacing that or at least keeping up with that. That's not a bad place to be. All right. So coming up, we got one more segment here. We're going to go back to a topic I talked about earlier today. I think it's important to cover it one more time. We'll get to it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
here. A couple minutes left in the show. Just got a press release from the Director of Communications from the Arizona State Senate Republican Caucus. There was a bill going through the Senate, Senate Bill 1413, Homelessness Encampment Removal, that was just vetoed by the governor. Here's the headline. It says, Hobbs irresponsible veto. And again, this is the Senate Republicans, of the bill to address homeless encampments. So here's what this bill would have done. In Senate Bill 1413 would have required counties, cities, and towns to provide the owner of the campsite. So if somebody reported a campsite, we've all seen them. I've talked about them in my, you know, close to my neighborhood where I used to live, that if somebody reported a campsite, that the city, counties, and towns would have 24 hours to give the, or they would have to give these people a 24-hour removal notice. After that time, the county, the city, or town would have to be, would be required to retain the property for 14 days so that the owner of the property has an opportunity to retrieve it. Any unclaimed property after the period would have to be disposed of. Counties and municipalities would then be required to clean the area. The city of Phoenix and the city of Tucson are two prime examples of local governments long ignoring a public safety issue that is now spiraling out of control. Murders, drug abuse, sex assaults, human feces, fires, hypodermic needles, and piles of trash are some of the issues plaguing homeless encampments and spilling into areas where families, children, and small business inhabit. This is according to Senator Wadsack. So before we leave, it is something to address. We all understand, at least I do, the plight of homeless people. It is something that I think is horrible. It is a terrifying thought that I would sleep outside, especially if I had young children. The idea that you don't have a home for your children is a terrifying thing to a parent. I am not ignorant of that at all. I've talked about having a family member, a very close family member, die homeless in Vegas, die in a homeless encampment. So it's touched my family. It's something that I would love to fight. I'd love to be a part of the fight against. But at the same time, you can't ignore the rules. You can't. If I had at my house, when I bought the first house I purchased a few years ago, it had desert landscape, and right after I bought it and moved in, it took me about 2 weeks to find somebody to come and take the weeds out. I just couldn't find anybody to do the job. There was nobody available. Nobody would return my call. And I remember my weeds got in my front yard in desert landscape. Some of them are like 3 feet high. I was that neighbor for a short time. And I was like, I have got to get this fixed because I don't want to be that neighbor. And Neighborhood Services in Phoenix sent me a letter, but I'd already had it done. Actually, 2 days after I had it taken care of, I got a letter from the city saying that if you don't take care of this, you're going to be fined. We're going to come in and do it, and we're going to fine you. And that's the rules. I mean, that's you can't let your weeds grow 3 feet high. I couldn't find anybody. I was diligently trying to, and I just couldn't get anybody to do it. And I finally found this guy to do it. He was terrific. My point is, you live within the rules of a community. I could not leave drug paraphernalia on my driveway. I couldn't relieve myself on the sidewalk. You know, if I got caught with a prostitute, I would go to jail. All of these things are true, and those are the rules. That's the law. If I had drug paraphernalia or drugs on me, if I was committing violent crimes against my neighbors, it doesn't matter if I'm in a tent on the side of the road or if it's my neighbor next door I just don't like. If I do that, I'm going to be jailed. There was no law enforcement. There's no enforcement of these laws. I would also venture to say that if I decided that I was going to put up a tent and live in my front yard, my neighbors would complain to the city, and they'd have a right to. So there is a balance here. I want to see people be able to be the best they can. And every one of us at some point in our life, I would imagine, is in what they consider to be a low place, a place where I never thought I'd be here. And sometimes that includes being homeless. But the first way to address it is to stop ignoring it and do something about it. We all know what it's like. We've seen it. You see encampments. You see people camping. I couldn't do it in my neighborhood. Couldn't put a tent in the front yard and sleep there for a week and a half. So we can't let it happen anywhere. Cities and towns should be required to deal with it. And dealing with it isn't just kicking people out. We're offering people services. But a lot of times people are reluctant because they don't want to follow the rules. Where there are times in your life you've got to follow somebody else's rules. You're not in a position where you can do it yourself. And this is what's frustrating, is that we have these two sets of rules. Well, I don't know why the governor would veto this bill. I mean, especially after watching what Phoenix is going through right now, this would also help give some clarity in state law where municipalities would understand, hey, we're in a position where we have a state law that now says we have to do this. So you can't sleep here. If you are looking now, what's happening is there are parks. There's a park, 19th Avenue north of Union Hills Drive, that's got one of the public swimming pools in it. We're starting to see for the first time homeless people camping out in those parks. Do you mean to say that the kids that play in that park should have to dodge what's going to happen in those encampments with drug paraphernalia and other things? It's just, it's not fair to the citizenry. And again, we're focusing on the wrong people. You can have a heart and you could want to help people without tolerating something that is bad for the community as a whole. That's where this problem lies, and I hope they get a better solution. We'll be back tomorrow. If you're a social media user, you can find us on Twitter two different ways. At Broomhead KTAR is my personal account. That's me if you hear or read a comment. At Broomhead Show updates you on the guests and things we have coming up on the show. And Mike Broomhead, all one word on Instagram, is how we keep in touch between shows. We're back tomorrow. Until then, have a great day. God bless. We'll be right back.